Llegó la primavera JCPenney con la última moda. Piezas cómodas y ligeras. Mezcla y combina lo nuevo de tus marcas favoritas y crea looks originales que se acomodan a tu presupuesto. Como las polos de St. John's Bay con un pantalón en algodón o un simple suéter y jeans de A&A. Encuentra el bolso de Liz Claiborne que siempre has querido y sandalias que combinen. Para noches más cálidas, elige pijamas ligeras y frescas de Ambriel. Trae a tu familia y descubran lo nuevo de primavera. JCPenney. Vale la pena.
Hey, pull up a chair. It's Hacks on Tap with David Axelrod and Mike Murphy.
Well, thank you, Senator Vance.
Well, I want to thank Governor Waltz.
I think this is a healthy conversation. I think there's a capacity to find solutions on this.
Tim, first of all, I didn't know that your 17-year-old witnessed the shooting. And I'm sorry about that. And I hope
appreciate
that he's doing
you
okay.
Saying so.
Christ have mercy. It is awful.
I'm going to thank Senator Vance. I think this is the conversation they want to hear. And I think there's a lot of agreement.
Well, first of all, Tim just said something that I agree with. We are going to shake hands after this debate and after this election. And of course, I hope that we win and I think we're going to win. But if Tim Walz is the next vice president, he'll have my prayers, he'll have my best wishes, and he'll have my help whenever he wants it. And whether you vote for me or vote for Tim Walz, I just want to say I'm so proud to be doing this and I'm rooting for you. God bless you and good night.
Well, David, let me tell you, I don't know about you, but I have had enough Minnesota and Ohio nice for a lifetime now after that debate last night.
Listen, I'm imbued with the spirit of warmth and comedy and with a T, and I'm going to, and therefore you and John Heilman here, I think we should just have a love fest.
I got to say, I don't like either one of you guys as much as those guys said they liked each other last night. I was like, last night, I'm listening to those guys going like, those guys like each other a lot more than the hacks like each other, for Christ's sakes. Hello, I like you. I agree with you. Oh, you know, I kind of agree with you. It's like, I sort of agree with you. I'm like, Jesus, Christ have mercy.
Yeah, you're nice. No, you're nice. Yes. And by the way, Vance, that guy is a sweetheart. We all know it. Ask any Haitian running for their life in
Springfield
right now.
So let me ask you about this. So obviously we're talking the morning after the vice presidential debate. Yeah. This thing intrigues me, though. First of all, let's talk about Vance, who did very well. He's very proficient. He was very slick. And, you know, was, yes, the portrait of nice, you know. And it's completely different than what he's doing out there on the stump, where he is, you know, nasty.
A normal vice presidential candidate, slash and burn.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, boy, or even one a normal vice presidential candidate for Donald Trump. So it's slash and burn times 10, you know,
and
as witnessed
by
the dogs
and
cats in Springfield, Ohio, and so on. Yeah. That wasn't the guy who showed up last night.
Well, it was weird because he combined two things. One, I'll do my best Eddie Haskell kind of fake nice guy thing. And I'll steal a page from the Vivek Ramaswamy playbook of say a lot of crazy, completely nut things really quickly so I'll sound smart. And he's not an idiot. The problem is he's Faust, too. But he won on points. I saw, like, tweets last night from the right, the greatest debate of the last 50 years, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Now, being a VP debate, of course, it doesn't matter for much. But I think it will, the fact that Vance is going to win the media score. Whether or not it moves voters, we ought to talk about. I don't think it really does at all.
Well, I have an alternative theory, okay? And I want to run by you guys. Now, I am a bleary-eyed bloviator, so take it for what it's worth. But something happened last night that was really interesting. I'm watching a debate, and I'm watching dial groups that our friends at A Future Forward had. And in those dial groups, and the group was more Trump-leaning or Vance-leaning than Waltz-leaning going in. Vance, he dialed pretty well most of the debate until some places that we'll talk about. But so did Waltz, except for some places that we talked
about. Yeah, that's kind of what I thought. Big, sloppy.
But here's the thing. Afterwards, the group, as you know, undecided voters at this stage in the election are an ornery bunch.
Yeah.
Okay. They're not some like easy to please people.
Oh, they, an incomprehensible bunch. Go on. Yeah.
They were raving, as were, you know, on the CNN online group, and then the CNN poll reflected some of this about the tone of the debate. That
They loved it.
Yes, because you saw two guys doing what you don't see people doing anymore, which is kind of speaking respectfully and granting points. And
They loved it. I agree. I've gotten all these emails, same point.
So, you know, my theory is this. This is, in a weird way, Vance has sort of opened a door to kind of anti-Trumpism, right? I think the reaction to that was in some ways a reaction to the environment that Trump has done so much to create. And I do wonder whether that ultimately, when Kamala Harris talks about turning the page on you know, division and hate and this grinding politics, whether there's gold in those hills. Because, because you know, technically, Vance won that debate, and there's no question about it. But you look at the numbers in these dial groups afterwards on, you know, who won, you know, not, you know, how did they do? They did relatively evenly. In the poll at the CNN did, they said 50-50 on who won the debate.
Same at CBS.
But I just wonder, you know, I think Waltz got by on basic ingenuousness,
right,
and decency.
Let me say three things quickly. One, I mean, Walz was as different from the way he's been in the campaign as Vance is, although Walz has been under witness protection since the convention. But you think about the guy who made it onto the ticket by launching a campaign of calling J.D. Vance weird, calling weird. He was, you know, he's, that's, you know, point, he looked, yeah, like that guy. He went to a different place as much as Vance did. And obviously that was a product of a strategy. We can talk about that strategy later. And I think, you know, there's something they clearly was, he was pursuing a don't be Joe Biden taking on Paul Ryan in 2012. Don't be the slash and burn attacking. It did not attack Vance on a million things he could have attacked him on. So that's one thing. The other thing is, you guys will remember this. The thing that struck me, to your point, David, is like going back to, I remember one of the clearest political memories I have of the 1990s was Bill Clinton giving a State of the Union in 1995. After the Republican takeover of the House in 1994, and everyone thought Clinton was fucked.
The era of big government is over.
But it was a long, long State of the Union, and it was had all those like micro policies in it, all that Mark Penn crap, and everybody in the punditocracy looked at it and said, God, what a long, meandering, boring State of the Union, and the public loved it. And it's kind of, this debate felt like that to me, where we're all kind of grading, you know, Tim Walz, God, what, you know, he's a... that you're giving it to J.D. Vance on points because he, you know, he was a better debater, and Walz seemed to be kind of nervous and wobbly at the beginning.
Right.
There wasn't enough combat. We all are looking for combat. All can become conditioned to that. That's kind of what we expect in a vice presidential debate.
That's the scorecard.
Definitely what we expect in the age of Trump. And here are these undecided and persuadable voters in the middle of the electorate going, thank God these guys are just trying to agree with each other. I don't even care if it's honest or if it's genuine. The fact that they're just kind of turned the volume down is such a blessed relief, to your point, Dave. And that's, I think, where the median voter in America is right now, which is, you know, they're tired of Trump and they want to find a way to be for Harris because they're...
Which should land for her. I agree.
If they can capitalize on it. Yeah.
I think that is the rocket fuel, whether or not the Trump campaign can execute it. I mean the Trump campaign. Can they ever adopt any of what Vance was able to do of Trump? I don't think they can.
No.
But she... there might be an open one vice president's debate. Who cares? Two, people, to the extent they knew either of these characters, went into the debate liking Waltz a lot more, and that hurt Vance because he started in a hole and he never quite got out of it, which is why all the post debate polls are 50-50, everybody going to their corner. But there's definitely a market for Ted Lasso politics here, and they were doing a bunch of that on the Dem side at the convention, you know, sweet and sour. All right, have five lemons. How'd you like a little piece of sugar now? You're killed for it. So I totally agree with the appetites. But you know the only thing I really care about in this debate? An audience of one. Donald J. Trump watching this, seeing the media fawn over Vance, thinking in his dark Voldemort head that that son of a bitch Vance went out there and did a fake nice guy act to suck up to the media. Where was the attack? Blah, blah, blah. Right. He's trying to upstage me. He's playing the long game, that little son of a... So watch how Stalin takes this. I think it might even spark Trump to ask for another debate. I'll show him all.
I like that he was tweeting about Pete Rose in the middle of the debate last night. Yes. That's kind of like my favorite thing was like that's how you know he wasn't loving Vance's performance, because he's like off Pete Rose, one of the all-time greats. I'm like, oh boy.
But I think the other kind of Schadenfreude thing will be there's going to be some Democrat kind of unfair buyer's remorse over Waltz. John Shapiro is going to have a good day today. God, if you were only up there, because Waltz is I kind of respect the life choices Tim Waltz has made more than all four of them, because I think he's a good person, but he has the killer instinct of a manatee, and he just wasn't able to put the iron to anybody. And being the nicer guy of the two and the more liked guy with this Ted Lasso theory probably helped him a little, but there are going to be people in the Democratic Party. He's going to get trashed for a while, and we're going to have the typical Democrat short but fierce nervous breakdown, I think.
And partly because of the fact that there are these lingering, I think, Mike, partly because there are these lingering, barely a day passes when someone, either in professional politics or someone who's really paying attention to the election, doesn't say to me, still to this day, don't you think she should have picked Josh Shapiro? That question comes up. It's a lingering, it's the lingering kind of nightmare scenario in everyone's head that, you know, we wake up on November 6th and she lost Pennsylvania by 8,000 votes, and that's the ball game. And it's still out there. And this debate will fuel that cycle, that narrative, and keep that nightmare alive.
Yeah. Well, I think where the Shapiro buyer's remorse will come is if she loses this race by the margin of Pennsylvania, and then you'll hear it loud and clear. There's no doubt if he were on the stage that night, I mean, he's a pugilist, and that thing would have been an entirely different thing. I think that would have thrilled the base, but I don't know how it would have done with those swing voters who reacted so well to Walsh, who not only was there, you know, this tone that they liked, but they liked the fact that this guy seemed like a guy they could know. This is a guy who could know them. That is a strength of him that, you know, we'll see. All I'm saying is I thought it was stunning that given how polished a performance that Vance turned in, how people reacted to the debate. And, you know, but listen, one of the things that undermined that polished performance came at the end. There were two questions. One is this one where he talks about how Trump saved
Donald Trump's savior of Obamacare. That's right.
It's really Trump care.
Now, what Governor Waltz just said is actually not true. A lot of what happened and the reason that Obamacare was crushing under its own weight is that a lot of young and healthy people were leaving the exchanges. Donald Trump actually helped address that problem, and he did so in a way that preserved people's access to coverage who had pre-existing conditions. But again, something that these guys do is they make a lot of claims about if Donald Trump becomes president, all of these terrible consequences are going to ensue. But in reality, Donald Trump was president. Inflation was low. Take-home pay was higher. And he saved the very program from a Democratic administration that was collapsing and would have collapsed absent his leadership. He did his job, which is govern in a bipartisan way and get results, not just complain about problems, but actually solve them.
What?
Let me just interject. I love the eyeliner on Vance.
Yes, I was going to say
thing going there. I'm sure back in Kentucky that that and they start teaching them early how to eyeliner up.
How does the Republican base feel about the fact that J.D. Vance looks like someone who's looks like, I don't know, Lou Reed in circa 1972.
You guys are missing the main point here.
Yeah. Well, we're obsessed on cheap optics, and Vance. I mean, the poor Waltz looked like he saw a ghost half the time. His resting face looked like.
So this guy,
but listen, yes,
you always. I was there. You were there. I was intimately involved with this. Trump tried 60 times to repeal the Affordable Care Act. He had no replacement for it. And then when he couldn't repeal it, he did everything he could to strangle it. He underfunded the subsidies. He cut back on the period of enrollment and marketing. And he did everything to undermine it. It actually was doing quite well when he arrived. And he tried to take a machete to it because he couldn't kill it in the Congress. So, I mean, this is like a rich retelling. And just as a cherry on the cake, in this campaign, he has said, I still want to repeal the Affordable Care Act. So that was 100% bullshit. And in the dial groups, that was one of his lowest points in the whole debate because people knew it was bullshit.
Well, also you couldn't follow it. It was like you couldn't parse most of those sentences. I couldn't like track what he was saying, other than somehow Trump saved it. I was like trying to actually listen, trying to track what the argument it was he was actually made, even ostensibly trying to make. It was just like bewildering.
And you know the thing with that is when you're going along and you're chugging along and you're hitting a nice tone and people are following it, and then you say something that is completely incredible. And you kind of pierce a little bit of that veneer, you know, that worked at. But the bigger one, you guys, was January 6th at the end of the debate, which was,
oh boy,
that was the gold. And that in his clothes was good too. That's where Walsh kind of came back to life a little.
Yeah, we should listen to that exchange.
Ability to say he is still saying he didn't lose the election. I would just ask that. Did he lose the 2020 election?
Tim, I'm focused on the future. Did Kamala Harris censor Americans from speaking their mind in the wake of the 2020 COVID situation?
That is a damning non-answer.
It's a damning non-answer for you to not talk about censorship. Obviously, Donald Trump and I think that there were problems in 2020. We've talked about it. I'm happy to talk about it further.
Actually, I don't think he was that happy to talk about it further. I don't think he wanted to talk about it.
I kind of wish that Waltz went back at him, yes or no answer, and ground a little bit, because I think the knife could have gone even deeper. But that's the problem with Vance's scam here, which is the Eddie Haskell stuff of be nice and sweet, but totally just spew, you know, so much stuff that people, even with the rudimentary knowledge, no, wait a minute, that's not right. And this is where Waltz drew him out a little bit. And back to the eyeliner, I'm looking at him, it popped into my mind, the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Yeah,
that's where I've seen
Tim
that
Curry.
Look.
Tim Curry. He's Frank N. Furter, or possibly the other guy whose name.
Yeah, Google it, kids. You will laugh because that's the look.
Hey David. Ask me. How many times I've been convicted of a drug offense? How much time I've spent in federal penitentiaries over the course of my life?
I don't have to ask you. I know the answer to that question, and I still.
If you ask me that question, I would tell.
Because we believe in second chances. We believe in second chances. We've invited you to be part of this show.
Oh, that's your liberal stuff. I say lock you up. Lock you up.
All right, my joke,
John. John, how much time have you done? How many times have you been convicted of a drug offense? And how much time in did you go to college for?
Mike, I'm focused on the future. And those things are around. And why is David Axelrod trying to censor the American people on Facebook? Yeah. It's like, it's not really an effective rejoinder.
Yeah. So by the end, you know, at the end of the debate, I think the Vance thing kind of fell apart a little, and Waltz gained. He also scored the highest scoring lines in the whole debate were Waltz talking about abortion rights.
I will say also the thing about that January 6th thing, just to say this debate, because it was so genial and because it was so actually kind of policy heavy, it's very hard for the morning show producers and for social media people to find memeable clips out of this debate. There's a lot of, like, you know, long answers that don't get any don't have a real sting. If you watch morning TV today, that January 6th clip,
that's not the only thing that's gonna go viral.
Not only because the media, first of all, because the media is rightly focused on January 6th and the insurrection and on the fact that there's still this 2020 denialism, and it hits our sweet spot because we think it's really important and we're not wrong about that. But also, it's one of the few soundbiteable clips from the entire debate. So if you watch morning TV today, and if you, I'm sure, yeah, as we look at that, what the long tail is on the internet, where a lot more people are going to see this debate than ever saw it live last night, that clip is going to be, is already everywhere. It's going to be everywhere. It's probably going to be the most circulated clip from the debate. In that sense, it kind of obviates all of Walz's terrible answer on Tiananmen Square and all the rest of it.
Yeah. Well, we ought to play a little of that though, because that knucklehead thing was a whopper, But I agree. It's the money clip, and it's good.
Right. And the big moment, winning in a debate like this, which is probably not going to leave a mark anyway, this is more than ever in a debate like this, it's about the moments that that live on, if have a shelf life, and that's going to be a moment that has a shelf life. It was
the campaign immediately cut an ad. I think they got an ad out this morning, maybe just a viral ad, but they're going to do what they can to fan this long. Yeah, let's listen to that. So he gets asked, you know, I'm not sure most Americans really give a shit about this, but Walz was asked about saying that he was at Tiananmen Square when the protest took place in 1989.
He said, just to be specific, he said that he had claimed previously that he was in Hong Kong when in the spring of 89 when the democracy protest broke out in Tiananmen Square. That was his previous claim, and then Minnesota Public Radio said, no, you didn't go there till August of that year. That's like the where what they he was asked to explain that discrepancy.
I grew up in small rural Nebraska, town of 400, town that you rode your bike with your buddies till the streetlights come on, and I'm proud of that service. I joined the National Guard at 17, worked on family farms, and then I used the GI Bill to become a teacher, passionate about it, a young teacher. My first year out, I got the opportunity in the summer of 89 to travel to China. 35 years ago, be able to do that. I came back home and then started a program to take young people there. We would take basketball teams, we would take baseball teams, we would take dancers, and we would go back and forth to China. The issue for that was to try and learn. Now look, my community knows who I am. They saw where I was at. I will be the first to tell you, I have poured my heart into my community. I've tried to do the best I can, but I've not been perfect. And I'm a knucklehead at times, but it's always been about that. Those same people elected me to Congress for 12 years. And in Congress, I was one of the most bipartisan people, working on things like farm bills that we got done, working on veterans benefits. And then the people of Minnesota were able to elect me to governor twice. So look, my commitment has been from the beginning to make sure that I'm there for the people, to make sure that I get this right. I will say more than anything, many times I will talk a lot, I will get caught up in the rhetoric, but being there, the impact it made, the difference it made in my life, I learned a lot about China. I hear the critiques of this. I would make the case that Donald Trump should have come on one of those trips with us. I guarantee you he wouldn't be praising Xi Jinping about COVID. And I guarantee you he wouldn't start a trade war that he ends up losing. So this is about trying to understand the world. It's about trying to do the best you can for your community. And then it's putting yourself out there and letting your folks understand what it is. My commitment, whether it be through teaching, which I was good at, or whether it was being a good soldier or was being a good member of Congress, those are the things that I think are the values that people care about.
Governor, just to follow up on that, the question was, can you explain the discrepancy?
All I said on this was, is I got there that summer and misspoke on this. So I will just, that's what I've said. So I was in Hong Kong and China during the democracy protest, went in. And from that, I learned a lot of what needed to be in governance.
That's the long version where he didn't really answer the question. And so then Margaret Brennan came back and said, excuse me, Governor, you just talked for 2 minutes and you didn't answer my question. How do you explain the discrepancy? And then he gave a humana, humana, humana 25-second answer, which was basically, you know, I can't really explain it, the discrepancy. That was basically what he said. And then the main thing is, he looked like a deer in the headlights throughout the whole thing. I mean, he looked utterly unprepared for the question. Now, it's a relatively recent thing. It's not an old story. That story came up just in the last 48 hours or so. But still, it betrayed a certain lack of preparation, because you would have thought they knew that they should have known that it was coming and he would have had a crisp, clean answer to it of some kind.
Yeah, I mean, and like, get the bad news out of the way at the beginning. You know, you want to tell the story about how you happen to be there. You can tell that story, but just answer the question first.
Stunning that I'm surprised. I'm sure they prepped him and he went off into his own Mankato twirl.
Well, let me say this, a basic rule of politics. Although maybe it worked for him, maybe that sort of, like I said, maybe that sort of aw shucks thing kind of, yeah. But the whole knuckle, calling yourself saying, yeah, I'm a knucklehead.
I actually think that worked in isolation, just because it's normal guy. Yeah, he's a knucklehead, but he's a good guy.
If you started the answer with, Margaret, I'm a knucklehead, I misspoke. Now let me tell you about my experience in China. Yeah. That would be the end of it. I misspoke. It's a long time ago. I made a mistake. I'm a knucklehead. Let's move on, right?
Yeah, and then Vance could have said, see, here's another thing we agree on.
Would have been the break into robotic Chinese, and then we'd get to live the Manchurian candidate. But
he's sloppy, man.
I mean, look, he was him. The other guy was slick. It's a sloppy tie, and I think you're right. His niceness saved his ass.
I think that's been his superpower as a politician, basically, that whole demeanor.
Let's stop for a minute and listen to a word from one of our fine sponsors. Hey, Hackaroos, as we transition into fall and our schedules sure get busier, back to school activities for the kids, tighter work deadlines, tell me about that in October in politics. Anyway, as we approach the end of the year or the start of holiday preparations, it's easy to forget about taking care of ourselves. Take Axelrod, passed out in an alley right now. I'm doing the ad alone. It's a tough time, and during this season, one simple but effective thing you can do for yourself is to start taking Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement brand. Okay, now I'm interested. Trusted, get this, by over 1 million people. See thicker, stronger, faster growing hair with less shedding in just 3 to 6 months with Nutrafol. Physician formulated with 100% drug-free ingredients, Nutrafol supports healthy hair growth from within by targeting the key root causes of thinning: stress, hormones, aging, nutrition, lifestyle, stress again, and metabolism through whole body health. Thinning hair is different for men and women, so a one-size-fits-all approach to hair growth just doesn't cut it. Nutrafol has multiple formulas for men and women that are tailored to different life stages, such as postpartum or menopause, and lifestyle factors such as a plant-based lifestyle. So you can get just what you need because it's individualized that way, which is a smart way to do it. With a Nutrafol subscription, building a hair growth routine is simple. Purchase online, no prescription required, it's drug-free. Automated deliveries and free shipping, that's good, keep you on track. Plus, you can save up to 20%. You'll have access to free naturopathic doctor consults, and a Headspace membership is, of course, included. So get results you can run your fingers through. For a limited time, Nutrafol is offering our listeners $10 off your first month subscription and free shipping when you go to Nutrafol.com and enter the promo code HACKS. Find out why 4,500 healthcare professionals and stylists recommend Nutrafol for healthier hair. Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol, Nutrafol.com, promo code HACKS. That's Nutrafol.com, promo code HACKS.
You talked, Mike, you've spoken to high-level Democrats under the guise of not being a Republican. And
No. Careful. I'm still Republican. We're bringing down the bad guy from the inside. But no, I'd spend a little time with a very high-ranking Democrat talking about the key states. And I was asked, what do you think? And I said, I think she's got the ingredients in front of her to win, but I worry a lot about the economic wall of lava, which can wipe her out, even with Trump. So I think it's a really tight race. And this is just perception, because I know they're working hard over there. But my campaign spider sense after, you know, near Jurassic amount of time doing this is like you guys, is it feels like they've slackened off a little. I think she has the opportunity to do something big and interesting every 6 days and ride that. And I haven't felt anything like that since the debate. That's why I keep harping on Al Smith dinner. Not that anybody cares about the Al Smith dinner, but it was a platform for her to score again and ride it. And instead, they ducked it. And so I feel like that. And then this person who's extremely well informed said, "I'm terrified. I'm not seeing what I need to see in state X and Y.
I know the Al Smith dinner is a particular favorite of yours, but she is doing 60 Minutes that night. That's probably going to get maybe almost as many eyes as the Al Smith dinner.
Yeah, right.
But you can do both and double kill. You know, the duck and the Al Smith thing with Trump there looks weak. And I think she'd crush there and it just lost opportunity. And you also do 60, you know, offense.
Let me do one slight little reframe here, which is, you know, does anybody here think that this debate is going to matter 48 hours from now? Right.
No.
That's our basic view is
only if it drives Trump nuts.
Right.
Yeah, that's okay. It. I think it's going to matter a lot. The Trump-Vance relationship is never going to be the same now. And Trump will act out. And I still think Trump might say, debate? I'm a master debater. I'll show you. Get me a camera.
Oh, he's a master debater, all right.
Pun intended, yeah. So stay tuned for crazy Trump here, because I think Vance is better looking than Stalin, and we're reading that in the papers now. So let's see what Stalin does about it.
David, do you think it affects the odds of a third debate? Does it make Trump more likely, less likely, or no impact whatsoever on his thinking about a second debate with Harris?
Well, before I answer that question, I got to get out of the mud. I'm still getting my arms around the whole your joke about master debating.
Trump is the master debater.
But I look, if rationality reigns, Trump will not debate. And he will not debate because he's
well. That answers it.
Right. So we definitely have a debate. Circle October 14th on your calendar.
because he's not a good debater anymore, and I'm not sure he ever was.
Not even
and
a master.
She is, yeah. And it would be to debate on October 23rd, which is the debate the date it would happen, with no chance to recover. I mean, she had 10 good days after the last debate.
Yeah.
So that is not what he wants to do. That said, Alyssa Farah Griffin, who was his communications director, who's on the panel at CNN with me, she doesn't believe the guy can pass on 70 million people. Others who know him say, you know, the idea that she bested him and that will be the final word he can't live with that. I think.
And that doubles now with 100%, Vance, the Republican Party's great
100%.
Hope.
I think the J.D. Vance thing is going to make him fucking crazy. And, you know, he's sitting there, he's still smarting over the fact that everyone in the known universe thinks he got his clock cleaned in the first debate. And now his understudy is perceived as having had a great debate, and people are explicitly saying, God, J.D. Vance is better than Donald Trump. I mean, that is burning a hole in his psyche.
Totally.
And I think, I'm not going to predict because you never know with Trump, but man, if I have thought from the very first day that he said there wouldn't be another debate with Harris, I thought there would be. And last night,
yeah,
I think increases the odds. Now, doesn't make it certain, but increases the odds.
One of the rules of Trump world is never upstage the leading man.
Right.
Yes. So we'll see.
I'm dying to read the background leaks out of Trump world. Trump was unhappy with Vance's strange feminine makeup.
Oh, yes.
You know, he'll go off on that.
Why
is he wearing the eyeliner?
I told some of the Dems.
I don't think eyeliner looks masculine. It doesn't look like a man.
Lipstick
some on.
People are talking. I'm hearing it. I'm hearing it everywhere.
You can't put lipstick on a pig.
People don't like the makeup. They don't like the makeup, JD. Yes. It's Haitian makeup. It's not good. And the other thing, I want to start a rumor that Trump's sinking of taking back the race with the debate challenge, and they've cleared J.D. Vance's schedule to be Trump's debate coach to fix his terrible debating. That's a good process story. I'm hearing it everywhere.
He's calling Don Jr. and saying, if I wanted a Maybelline model, you shouldn't have sent me J.D. Vance.
Exactly.
I said I wanted a runway model. Not an Ohio.
Yeah, I got the Revlon lady.
Exactly. This is like open mic night at some very low brow
at the funny bone and
karaoke comedy bar.
Right. So okay, so it's not gonna leave it. We think it, other than in Trump's head, it has no political impact at all. And then there's the question I think that Mike, you were getting at, which is like kind of to tie this to the race, which is what does it do to the narratives about Harris and Trump and where the race stands right now? And
it could give Trump a little crumb. I mean, I think the press would like to write Harris stumbles a little, loses some gas. Well, J.D. Vance gives Trump, and again, back to that thing, a little bit of a comeback. I think if I were I'd want to fix the narrative with some kind of offense.
Here's the reality.
They're gonna try 60 minutes, reality but is she won't be great
she's
at that.
She has reached a plateau. She made incremental progress for every day for 10 days after the debate, and she's kind of stalled out. And I think in the last 72 hours, maybe has even lost a tiny bit. And one of the things that I want to raise with you guys is there are a lot of things going on in the world. There is a war in the Middle East that could very well expand. Yeah. There is a longshoreman strike that could have real implications for the economy and for inflation and supply chains and so on. So there is a lot happening. I think that does not help her. I don't think these things help her. I don't think.
Well, it gives Trump the strength angle again. That, you know, those longshoremen wouldn't try that hokey pokey with me, and I'd make one call to that Isla, whatever the hell his name is, and that war would end.
But here's,
that's perfect for Trump shtick.
Here's a direct question to the two of you both as former high level hacks. The last weekend when the last round of New York Times Siena polls came out, where they had finally done all the battleground states, there was this, you know, everyone took a deep breath and said, okay, so she's got this small 2.5, 3-point lead nationally. She's got smaller, but kind of consistent leads in the blue wall states. She's not doing as well in places like Arizona, Florida, in places like Arizona and Georgia. But you know, the race is as close as it's ever been. The New York Times has the 270 scenario could happen. So the race is super tight. And I would say in our world, the single question I have heard more than any other question in the last week has been, is Harris doing enough? Is she doing enough? Which goes to the stalled out question.
Right.
I ask you, this is the question to the two of you is, like, do you think she's doing enough? And if the answer is no, what should she be doing? Like, what? More interviews, more events, more what?
We've talked about this before. I think she needs to do all of the above. She needs to do town halls. She needs to do OTRs where she's interacting with people. She needs to do local news outlets. She needs to do interesting. She did a podcast this week, but interesting kinds of alternative media that will get into the seams of the electorate in a way that mainstream media doesn't. She needs to The bar gets raised all the time in this, and the bar is now raised. She has passed the early tests. The last test is how much is she willing to expose herself to that kind of unscripted scrutiny? And it's not a matter of satisfying the media. It's a matter of satisfying voters. They want to see who you are.
It doesn't feel like her schedule has been super intense. And I just, in general, in terms of public events, not like she's not doing anything, but Mike, it's like, my sense of it is she's just not, it doesn't feel like I'm running flat out. I am everywhere. J.D. Vance has been, has been more ubiquitous over the last few weeks than she has. He looks like he's like we're running with our lives and democracy is at stake. She does not, it doesn't feel like Harrison walls are everywhere.
No, I agree. And I would give the same prescription as Dr. Axelrod here, which is fill the zone. You know, the thing, when you keep doing high wire interviews, okay, Super Bowl interview on 60 Minutes, it gets too much scrutiny. You do a bunch of that stuff and it's like, oh yeah, learn more about her. The other thing, I wouldn't be afraid to announce a 100-day goal. Here's what I'm going to get done for you in the first 100 days and go take it on the road for a week. Right. Something sharp, some kind of contrast. I would also, as her visibility increases by doing all this stuff, even at an impromptu, you know, I'd throw another debate challenge out at Trump. Yeah, he's chicken. He'd probably send Vance. He can't debate. I'm ready for him. Just to you know, mock Donald a little, but more volume, more aggression. And I would talk more metal bending jobs. They have such a good story that nobody in America knows. And I'll go into my EV thing for a merciful 10 seconds.
Well, you're kind of right over your shoulder. You might as well.
Clock is running. Yeah,
I got Muskie on the other shoulder. I'm doing double here. But they've got 200,000. The problem is the Dems always go do green jobs, and people think they're going to be an accountant working on bamboo paper or something, and a millwright in Detroit doesn't want to hear that. But when you say metal-bending manufacturing jobs, we've built more auto plants in the last 3 years than we have, I believe, in the last 30. And they're all in Georgia and Michigan, duh. So I would go out and tell that story.
That would have been a good talking point for Waltz last night.
Offense. Yes. Totally. Let me tell you about a plant I was at last week in Georgia. Right. They're going to have 400 electricians starting next week to wire this thing. They're going to be 3,000 more. I mean, run a Michigan governor's race a little bit and a Georgia governor's race in those two states and get in the dirt. Look at the damn things. Go pick up a big-ass electric pickup truck in Detroit. And talk about these jobs weren't here 2 years ago. And by the way, we're going to beat the damn Chinese.
Mike, you know,
because we're going to have a president on your side, not on Xi's.
Mike, you know Michigan really well, and David, you do too. You lived there part time. When you guys see the, because we haven't seen each other for the last couple of weeks, so I need to tap into your smarts about this. You know, the
you got a lot smarter since you've been gone.
Yeah, alleged smarts. Rumored.
I just said that.
Unproven.
I just said that there's been a striking thing, which is that she's, again, according to all the public polling, she's been performing consistently better than some people expected in those blue wall states in Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. Yeah. Are you guys suspicious about that on the basis of your spidey sense and any private polling you're seeing?
I think that those
states are tighter.
I think she is in a pretty good spot in Wisconsin. I think she is. I think she is struggling in Michigan, and I think, you know, they've been pummeling her on the electric car issue, and she hasn't fought back on that. And you've got you do have a problem with the Arab community around Detroit, and you have the problem that she's had other places where she's sort of lagging the numbers she needs right now among African American voters, and there are turnout concerns. So Michigan's a concern. Pennsylvania, I think she's got a little bit of a lead, but that's a treacherous state that, and she has to have it. Georgia becomes important, the state Murphy's mentioned.
Yeah, it's the hedge, exactly. Unless you need pull off the trifecta with Nevada and Arizona, which is Nevada, she'll win. But Arizona, let me just.
It's a hedge against losing Michigan, too.
Right. Well, Michigan, too. Right. Exactly. Right. So in Michigan, there's one kind of new development, and Trump's got a pretty good add up. In fact, it's all about you're going to lose your job as an auto worker.
Attention, auto workers. Kamala Harris wants to end all gas-powered cars. Crazy, but true. Harris's push requiring electric only is failing big. And Michigan auto workers are paying the price. Massive layoffs already started. You could be next. President Trump's committed to protecting America's auto workers, standing up to China's unfair trade, fixing the economy, and ending inflation.
I'm Donald J. Trump, and I approve this message.
There's something going on with this Lebanon invasion, too. So Dearborn, Michigan, South Wayne County, largest Arab American community in the world. By the way, ask anybody in counterterrorism. Thank God for Dearborn, because that's where we recruit our native Arabic speakers who have been incredibly vital in the work to keep terrorist events from happening in America. But that community is very tied, partially Muslim, partially Christian. Now, the Christian half has not been engaged, and it's, you know, a pretty strong democratic community. The Christian half has not been engaged in this. The Muslim half, you can call a relative now with a cell phone and hear about a cousin who got killed. Well, now that it's in Lebanon, it's touching the Christian Lebanese with a lot of relatives back home in Michigan. And Michigan Pauls on the Dem side are very concerned about this because it could double the problem. So, that is a huge factor there. And finally, we should put out one plug. I totally agree on Pennsylvania, but our friend John Anslone and Tony Fabrizio, who's also been on the podcast, who's a Republican pollster, works for Trump, did a joint Pennsylvania poll, and it showed her up a couple. So I'm sure Tony is hanging upside down in the basement of Mar-a-Lago in the, next to the closet where they keep all the nuclear codes for everybody to see. That was a little better indication. Most of the private stuff is tighter in Pennsylvania, and I've heard about a few polls having her down one or
I'll
two.
Tell you that
so it's all margin of error and plenty to worry
I'll
about.
I'll tell you the one other running thing that I keep hearing from that the little just now, like you keep these little phrases and from people in the camp in both campaigns and people out in the broader political world, which is especially I would say more on the left in this case. Do you hear people saying, you know, this feels the her underperformance with African-American voters and their the kind of perception that that they're not doing enough, particularly on that front. I've heard a number of there's like the phrase, which is this feels like 2016 again. And I've heard that in the last couple of weeks from a bunch of people and where the you know people who are talking about this kind of racial depolarization that she's performing better with white voters than they than people necessarily thought, better than Biden right now than Biden did in 2020. Yeah. But yeah. You look at the African-American numbers and it's, you know, Georgia, North Carolina, those are both states that with a strong performance of African-American voters, she should be able to win both those states. Yeah. And there seems to be like a little inattention to it that's worrying Democrats that that they're not focused enough on trying to turn out what should be their base.
Well, much better than with Biden, but work to do.
Well, better than Biden was, I would say, Mike, better than what Biden was before he dropped out, but not better than Biden was in 2020, where right. his numbers with African-Americans were off the chart.
She's lagging those numbers. On North Carolina, I've always, you know, thought that Georgia was actually a better bet because the, you've got 10% more African-American voters
yeah,
there.
It's easier.
And North Carolina is the second most rural state in the country. Here's my question about North Carolina. You had these killer storms, which, by the way, was a third big story this week.
Yes,
these
another
killer
another
storms. And there's a lot of displacement in western North right. Carolina. Now, Asheville is a blue dot in that area, but there are a lot of Republican voters there.
I was
going to
say, Asheville's key.
But yeah. those voters in Asheville are, they're you know, the kind of voters who will figure out a way to vote. You know, they're upscale, kind of liberal voters, and they're probably going to figure out a way to vote. I'm not sure a bunch of these folks who've had their homes and lives destroyed elsewhere in western North Carolina, in the mountains, there are going to be as easy to wrangle for the Trump campaign. So that's I don't know how that's all going to play out, but it's an unpredictable element in North Carolina that has made it maybe a little more interesting. But just in this is a long way around to answer your question, Heilman. I think that. The battleground states, the northern tier battleground states, other than Wisconsin, are scary. And you can't count on them. She's got to find maybe an insurance policy. And that's why there's so, but she needs a second act. That's the main thing.
She's getting the second look now, and she ought to grab the microphone and kill. That's how you get elected president.
And I think that the thing we talked about at the beginning, like this hunger for something else,
it's the gold.
Yeah,
I totally agree.
Yeah,
with
I
this.
Think that's. I think that's the way she should. I think that's the way she should go.
Optimistic, future focused economy.
Well, and
know,
just
turn the page.
Just decent.
Turn the page. Yeah, decent.
Decency, civility. You know, let's stop killing each other here and start getting some shit done. I just think there's an audience for that, and she's got to become sort of evangelical about that. So we'll see what happens.
She could wrap it in another debate challenge. Look, I'm hoping a little of JD's civility rubs off on Donald, and I'd be happy to debate him again if he's, you know, maybe JD can give him some tips.
Yeah. Oh my God. So that would, if you really focused on how to bait that hook, man, you'd be deep. Trump would.
And you can do that in an impromptu. Yes. You know, then it's very organic. It's not some stage phony challenge. That's why she ought to be doing more promptus with a great soundbite every day.
Let me posit something else to you guys. Trump's big play right now, and they're doing a pretty good job of getting heavy weight around one spot at a time. Murphy, there's a on the Harris side, they're running a lot of ads at once, and I'm a little suspicious about how the buying is happening over there and whether it's strategically smart. But let's set that question aside. Trump has put tons of weight behind this this trans spot. You know, Harris from 2019 saying she'd pay for, you know, the prisoners to get surgery, and
sexual reassignment surgery.
Reassignment surgery. Thanks. And it's a, you know, it's a pretty jarring spot. They had it three times on Monday Night Football, so they know their audience. What would you guys do about that strategically if you were her? And generally, what do you do about all these kind of crazy positions that she took in 2019 when she got a lot of bad advice and ran a bad campaign and looked bad saying stuff that she didn't clearly wasn't that attached to?
Well, I'd be careful in falling to the swamp. All right, they're spending $11 million calling us a prison trans left-wing, you know, social engineer, whatever it is. Why don't we spend $10 million denying it? So now it's the central issue of the campaign.
Yeah, I agree with that. I'm not saying it's an
ad thing. The subject. I'd fill the zone with other stuff. And if you get the media question, the more media you do about what about all your kooky position. I've grown and evolved. I'll tell you, the best way to learn to be an effective president is to be vice president. You're in every room. You learn everything. And I got a great plan for the next 4 years. There are going to be some changes. I'm going to put the middle class first for a change. I'm going to bring in new faces, new energy, new ideas. Boom, 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 boom. Sell your candy.
Yeah. So basically avoid it.
Yeah. I don't think, I think their game is to engage it. Now we're going to have a big argument about trans prisoners. It's Hillary in bathrooms.
The button on the Trump spot is smart because it is like, while she's thinking about this, I'm thinking, you know, Trump is worried about jobs and getting the border done. Right. And so they have the right button on it. Yeah, Heilman.
I think, David, I think the, you know, to your, it ties neatly into the previous point, which is you got to like just point to, you don't want to get in a fight over trans stuff. Specifically, but you can kind of point to it as this is another example of why we need to move past Donald Trump. He just wants to get in. He wants to drag us into division and into the politics of anger and hate. And I'm so like JD Vance, I'm looking towards the future. You know, I think you gotta kind of portray that those kinds of attacks as just, you know, there he goes again.
Yeah.
You know, trying to focus on the tonal thing. But I still think that it's a mistake that she hasn't nailed. Trump didn't go after her in the debate in the way that you thought he was going to on her changes of her new positions relative to 2019. And I still think that she's never had taken the opportunity or really had the prime opportunity to really try to like address all of that in some comprehensive way. And we've talked on the show and Mike just did a version of it, but I mean, it still is a thing that you hear from people, which is they don't really feel like they understand. She moved away from all those positions without ever really explaining it in some way that was convincing and authentic. And I think that's still an opportunity. It's an opportunity for her to be able to sort of talk about her evolution, because evolution is something that voters will embrace if it's properly explained to them.
Yeah. There's just a lot of evolving to be done.
Well, that's another problem they've got. She doesn't like to admit that.
Right.
That's why she's never had a good fracking answer.
Right.
She gives this deposition. Well, at 3:07 p.m., I said on 2000 in a debate that I was sort of kind of okay with fracking. And rather than say, I've evolved, I've learned a lot, you know, quote Churchill, when the facts change, I take another look at my views.
Well, you know, the other thing is she's been vice president of the United States for 3.5 years.
Yeah.
And I think she ought to take advantage of that and say, you know, you gain a broader perspective in that office.
Yes.
And there are a number of things that I've thought through, and there are a number of things that, you know, a number of the circumstances have changed in other places. But I am articulating now what I will do as president of the United States.
Right. I was vice president, I had only represented the people of California. And then I became vice president. Yeah. I represented all 50 states. And when that happened, you know, that was a transformative experience for me. I learned
a
lot.
You can even make this. Even make a meal out of, you know what, you're never going to hear this from somebody running for office, but I was wrong. You know, and I can admit it. That's part of character.
She can't say knucklehead because it's been taken.
Yeah, knuckleheads and Stolten, but I was a chowderhead, my Michigan friends, or my Boston pals. But no, people love that. I'll never get in the Whitman race. We're running for reelect in 97 in New Jersey, and we had the usual car insurance blow up. And it was a fight, but the governor got up and said, I didn't do a good job. I got to do better. Yeah. We got to plan for term two. It was 5 points on the ballot overnight. It worked like a charm. People love it.
It's disarming. Yeah.
Yeah. Because what? Honesty from a politician? I can't believe
These are good ideas, you guys. And we perform this as a service. So if there are other candidates who want us to work through
their
problems right here on the podcast, we will do it.
Yeah, yeah. Call 1-800 Stalling Campaign, and we'll try to get you going.
Mike, I think yes. At some point, Mike called this like the cleansing power of apology or something. It's like, it's true. It's like, there's nothing people like better than being apologized to. Hey, I'm sorry. Yeah. I was wrong. You know, please accept I'm human.
Just
people
like
go,
you.
Oh, hey, wait. Okay, great. It's
I know.
It's,
I'll tell you, there's nothing I hate in a campaign staff call. There's always some jerk who says, well, we can't show weakness. I'm like, well, you know, look at the Russian army. Here's weakness. Retreat 1,000 miles, freeze everybody to death, and you're in Berlin 2 years later. Sometimes a little weakness is the strongest offense.
Wow, I got to go back and listen to the tape of this and follow your...
Yeah, I can tell. You were up late last night.
I'm in the trenches of World War II with you.
Yeah, well, good analogy.
Before we go, you guys, we haven't done this book club thing in a while, but I want to recommend to you and to anyone interested in politics and particularly urban politics and government, a buddy of mine, Forrest Claypool, who was one of the most talented public administrators I ever knew. He started off as a partner of mine in the political business and became Rich Daley's one of his first chiefs of staff in Chicago and filled a number of positions in that city and ran for office and served and so on. He wrote a book called The Daily Show, and it was lessons, transformative lessons from Daley's administration. And Daley was a transformative mayor in that city. It's a pretty good book with a lot of good stories. I admit I wrote the foreword to it, but I recommend it to you if you're interested in city politics and
we'll put it on our website, which is hacksontap.com/bookclub. And I will say that one of my voting names in Chicago is Mike Claypool. So there you go.
You were gonna say,
in honor.
It was Mike Daley. Mike Daley. Yeah. For a second.
I also vote under Claypool Jones, Claypool O'Rourke. I got 17 Claypool names. No, I'm going to check it out because I've heard tell. And the Daley administration is really interesting.
Oh, yeah. No, he was a really fascinating guy. And I rode that journey with him, you know, when he came to office in 1989, Chicago was really on the edge of the abyss in many ways and torn apart by racial strife and corrupt, weak politicians in charge. And he turned the city around in a really big way. So anyway, just wanted to mention that.
We are going to apologize, though, to our hackeroos, because yet again, we don't have time to get to the
cleansing.
Mailbag.
Go ahead.
Yeah, there you go. But send us a bunch of questions. We're trying to do like a double mailbag with more questions next week.
We'll be in the bag next week. You can be assured of that.
Yeah, Mike, you need to tell them to call in. We'd like to hear their voices on the voicemail.
Yeah, we do like the call-ins. Remember, you can do it on voice memo on your smartphone. Just email it to us. Just, you know, we're the bloviators around here, so try to keep it to 30 seconds. Use your name. Send it to hacksontap@gmail.com, hacksontap@gmail.com. Or you can call our voter registration center in Chicago and leave a voicemail on the special number. 773-389-4471. I'll repeat it because who can remember that? 773-389-4471.
AI Murphy. I love AI Murphy.
Yeah.
I love
it. Hey, speaking of AI, Dev, you guys seen the Suno thing? Do you know about this? This AI music thing? It's like a site that you type in like 200 words, tell them what kind of music you like and what the topic is, and you give them as much detail as you can in 200 words. And like 20 seconds later, they send you back a song. So I think I'm going to throw one in about you guys.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
Well, listener challenge. Okay. Somebody get a couple of songs written. The best one we'll play in the mailbag next week.
Not a substitute for real human.
Unless we get sued by an AI lawyer.
Not a substitute for real human songwriters and musicians. Let me add that.
Yeah, you're worried about mail from ASCAP and the violin union. Good Democrat. Yeah. But yeah, if we get a really cool song sent to us, we can play it. Just check to make sure we can put it on without getting sued.
Well, I won't put the truth in the 200 words, so it'll probably come out clean. Yeah.
And one last plug, everybody. Don't miss the new episode of Directly Current, a podcast about EV politics hosted by the great Max Patton. We had a special guest, a guy thinking of buying an EV, needs to figure out which one, and had a sharp political take on EV politics. The one, the only, the hack, David Axelrod guested. David, thank you for that. Check it out, Directly Current with Max Patton on all your pod platforms.
Baseball playoffs just started. You know, the Detroit Tigers in the hunt. Many other teams were in the wild card round here. Do we have I know David, I don't know whether Murphy's really a baseball fan, but David, I know you're obsessed with Major League Baseball, even though the White Sox had the worst season in the history of Major League Baseball. The worst, or
there are statistical debates about this, but they lost more games than anyone in modern Major League history.
Pretty fucking bad. And the Cubs did not make the playoffs, but do you have a dog, so to speak, in this fight?
I'll probably root for the Tigers because I live in Michigan. A buddy of mine, Scott Harris, is the president of the club, and they're a good story.
They're great. Let's just say it.
They're a good story.
So
let's go Tigers.
And I'm going on this site. I'm working on the ballad of Tim Walz. I was on my way to Menards. Debating's awful hard. All right. I've got my hook. Let me see if we can come up with.
I was going to say, let's go Mets.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
I thought you were an LA native.
I say let's go. I'm true blue Dodgers all the way, but the Dodgers are just going to roll through the whole thing. I like to root for the Mets until they get to the Dodgers. And then, of course.
I grew up a Mets fan, so. But I can't root for them now. Hey, speaking of let's go, I think we have to. So,
yeah, get the hook. They're going to turn our mics off like last night. So
good,
thank
to see you
guys.
Christ have mercy. Christ have mercy.
Well, on that note.
All right.
See you next week. Happy New Year to all my Jewish friends out there. All right, guys. See ya.
All right. See ya.